Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of brainhackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of brainhackers.com, and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, Brain Hackers. Dave Farrow here. I've got Sue Crum on the show today, and we're going to talk about women over 40, productivity, and work-life balance. Hey, Sue, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much, Dave. It's great to be here.
All right. So this is a topic that really interests me. A lot of people might be surprised, me being like a man, but I always think that, as we're getting older, the story of our lives becomes kind of more interesting, you know, trying to find productivity, meaning in life, you know, like when you're younger, there's just all these sorts of goals that fly around. But then when you're older, you start to think, oh, you know, maybe I should have tried that. Maybe, you know, regret starts to set in, things like that. So I just think it's a more interesting story when I'm talking to somebody like you who says you specialize in women over 40, right?
Right.
And also when you're talking about work-life balance, women over 40, I mean, that is a huge hot potato, you know, because you're also talking about families and the being able to balance having kids with having a career. That's obviously one of the biggest ones, but there's other other challenges. So where should we start? Where do people start when they try to find out your information? What's the one thing that you would like to tell women if they don't know already?
That it's never too late. You know, some women have had different goals or ideas that they wanted to do, and their life took some turns and twists along the way, and they set those goals aside. And maybe for some of them, they stayed at home and raised families, which was a nice thing for them to do. Mm-hmm. And then those kids launched, which is great. That's the job of a parent, launch your children. So mm-hmm. then they launched, and now it was kind of like, you know, now what?
Emptiness syndrome, right?
Yeah, exactly. For some women, they actually apparently do go through that. I never did because I was very busy with a previous career at the time. And so I didn't have a chance. I was kind of in a job drinking water from a fire hose. So I didn't have any time to notice that the darling daughter had left town to go to college in another state. But
do you feel also looking back, did you regret some of that? Because I'm in that a little bit myself, and my son's like just 4, so I still got time.
You've got a ways to go.
Yeah, but I'm working so many hours, I miss so many important points in life,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly. I mean, you know, I tell women especially, you know, we can't go back and change yesterdays, but we can go forward and plan better tomorrows and better todays. Mm-hmm. I was one of those career women that I went back to work full time when our daughter was 11 months old. And then I did get off that track for a while when she was 4. I think 3.
How tough was it to get back to work when she's 11 months old, though?
It was a great new job opportunity, and okay. So it was like I was a teacher.
It's exciting.
And it was creating a new program with second, third, and fourth graders who were Title I students, Title I low socioeconomic, and they were just failing. Mm-hmm. And the principal said to me, when he was hiring me, just go for it. Forget the school district curriculum. They can't figure it out. You go mm-hmm. develop your own curriculum. So I did. And my husband and I worked it out as a team, and that was fine. But then when she got to be about 3 or 4, I stayed home for about 3 years, and then I went back.
Oh, wow.
And I was at the time she went off to college, I was an assistant superintendent for a school district. Mm-hmm. And we were going through a unification, going from a K-8 district to becoming a K-12 district and starting a high school from nothing. So it was a very busy time. And
But I want to get down to kind of some interesting things that this really brings up, because there's a huge culture war going on right now over some things that I find are fairly well established science, you know, very, very fairly well understood phenomenon. You know, we know that a large percentage of women, when they reach a certain age, priorities change. They want to have children, or they want to have family, or perhaps get less ambitious and want to have more balance in life. Not all, only about 10% more than male counterparts, but it's statistically significant, right?
Yeah.
And this accounts for a large number of women who are incredibly talented, you know, STEM, all that other sort of stuff,
right,
leaving the workforce at what would be objectively the prime time for them to build their career. And then, you know, men stick around, build a career, and tend to make a whole lot more money. And the interesting thing is the data shows us that you don't need to work very much more to make a whole lot more. It's something like 14 extra hours per week on average doubles your income at different, you know, stratas, right? So like
different stratas for sure.
Yeah. And the super ambitious get super rewarded for that extra ambition, you know? And those who choose something more work-life balance, they, you know, I mean, I don't want to use the word punished, but they don't get nearly as big a reward. So in other words, you know, you work 10% less, you don't get 10% less, you get half less.
Right.
And how do we, as a society, so this is what we know, even though even stating that is fairly controversial, because, you know, people want to attribute that difference in income to other factors, but that seems to be the biggest factor, is women, you know, choose to have a work-life balance and have kids. How do you then balance that in society, where we want women to be, you know, 50% of politicians, 50% of CEOs, we want them to be more ambitious, yet that might not be their ambition. You know, how do we find that balance? Yeah. In life?
You know, it's been a dilemma that's been discussed with women for years and decades. And I think each woman has to really kind of find her own pathway. And for some women, they are more ambitious, and children may not even be in their picture at all. And we have to just let that be, because we already have enough bad parents out there in the world. We don't need people who really don't have that desire and burning passion to become a parent in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ones that suffer are the children. And I certainly saw that in my previous career. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to kind of let each woman kind of find their own path. And I think it's a little different. There are the career women, and they know right off that they don't plan to have children, and they're planning to strive and succeed, and they've got a path that they've mapped out, and they're not going to deviate from that.
Whereas, yeah, no, that's true. You actually hit a very important trend that worldwide birth rates are at an all-time low, and they're getting lower. Most people are having one children or two children. The idea of the middle child is all but disappearing in this generation. It's not just North America. It's in Africa. It's in India. It's in everywhere else.
That's interesting. I gave a 3.5-hour presentation yesterday to a group of working women, and there was a woman in the group who right now, they were all excited and all around her. She's expecting her fifth child.
Wow.
In 4 months, and works full time. So I was kind of blown away with that.
That's definitely an outlier. Yeah.
And I was amazed at when she talked about, the topic was work-life balance. And when she talked about her evenings and the streamlined approach to getting this one and that one, and they were all little people. You know, she's talking about the grocery list, and she said, well, the ones that can write can put something on the list. But, you know, I said, well, how many don't write? You know, and she said, well, the baby doesn't write, and the kindergartner does, you know, just is learning letters. So, you know, that was surprising that someone with that number of children was out in the workplace full time.
Yeah. Well, there are some people say that we're less socialized because we don't have as many siblings, and the siblings actually help each other, you know, like learning things like that and chores and stuff.
Well, that's interesting, because I'm now part of four generations of only children females. So no one in my group has siblings. So that's just interesting.
That is really, yeah. And it's, I don't know, it's fascinating, because there's all sorts of different families out there that can take different roads. I'm with you that I think, you know, people should work this out for themselves and decide what they want to do. It just tends to be that the data becomes very stark. You know, you look at the Scandinavian countries who have been trying to create an egalitarian society for longer than anybody else known. And, you know, it's actually gotten more stark. When people have more freedom they tend to go, genders tend to separate more. Like the number of nurses that are female is like 99.9%. The number of engineers that are male in places like Denmark and stuff are like 99.99%. And in North America, we think that's a horrible thing and the result of discrimination. But, you know, when you look around, when you give people more freedom, these gender differences get larger, not smaller. The previous thought was that they would get smaller, that give two people the same opportunities, they're going to pursue the same path. But I'm actually kind of on women's side here, where I think they make more sensible decisions. Why, you know, if you're a millionaire, why do you have to be a billionaire? Go home and like spend some time with your family, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No one ever, what is it on the tombstone, says, I wish I'd spent more time at the office.
I'm going to put that on my tombstone just to be a master. Okay. So let's get into some fun tips and everything and out of the politics a bit. Give a couple of tips on how somebody can achieve that work-life balance if that's what they want. Let's say they're middle class, you know, and they seem that they're working too hard and life's passing them by.
Yeah, I think they've got to take a little time and step back and see where are the road bumps in their life. And, you know, where's the chaos? Where is it coming from? Is it the commute is terrible? Is it that you're leaving the house too short and you're not allowing enough time to get to work? Is it that there's chaos in the home front and you can't, you know, get out the door with matching shoes every morning? So you already start your work day, you know, behind the eight ball because you're just kind of a little wound up with some traffic, or you're wound up with late dropping kids off, whatever it is, you got to step back and kind of spend more time planning and less time doing. And you can, you know, the quote from Abraham Lincoln, I don't know who was there who wrote it down, but, you know, if I've got 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'm going to spend 4 hours sharpening the axe.
Yes. Yeah.
And so we forget that because it gets us into a busy mode, and people boast and wear busy as a badge of honor. And it's really, it's really the people that are not talking about how busy they are. They're also the ones that are getting stuff done because they've taken time to plan things out, whether it was sharpening the axe or stepping back and just looking ahead at the week to come up and say, all right, where are my must do's and where can I put in some of those other things I want to do in life? Where can I meet friends? Where can I, you know, call a parent? Where can I get to the gym? Where can I just have some me time?
And so how do you organize this? There's different strategies for organizing tasks, like the four blocks, you know, with Mike's, like a Mike's idea, where it's like something that's important and urgent, important but not urgent, and urgent but not important, and, you know, and so forth, things like that. Well, what sort of strategies do you have for that day-to-day organizing your tasks?
Well, I think people have got to, when they leave work, they've got to kind of identify what's one or two things that tomorrow must get done. And so that kind of sets, you know, the brainwaves to thinking about it, but not really thinking about it. So when they come in the next day to work, it's really top of mind. Okay, if nothing else happens today and there's chaos and disruption and interruption and distractions, which happens to everyone in the world of work and everyone in their life, what's one thing that if I get nothing else done today, I move this project? What's that one thing?
Okay.
And that, keep that top of mind.
Now that is for the intellectual job. That is for the, you know, the job very much like mine and like a teacher, you know, like, you know, something that involves a desk and an office and stuff. What about for people who are, you know, trading their time for money? You know, they're working the hourly wage and they're almost, you know, feel pressured for that. What's the adaptation for work-life balance in that case?
Well, I think they've got to take a look back. Are they happy with the job? Because everyone can make a contribution. And are they happy with that particular job? Or are they just kind of going through the motions and just not really coming into that workplace with passion? And the story that I really like to think about or talk about really is the man in the hospital who's mopping floors, and a reporter comes in and says, oh, what do you do here? And the man stops and he says, what we do here is we save lives. So he's the fellow mopping the floor, but he knows he's there for a bigger purpose. And they're there together. And together, if he does his job well and everybody else does their job well, more lives will be saved. Oh, so we have to kind of look at what's the bigger purpose of the job that you have. And where can you find some passion of what you're doing, that you're making a difference and you're making a contribution. So it's kind of like,
Does everybody need a purpose for their job? You know, I mean, I remember my dad was really much had the belief that he never wanted to enjoy his job because he thought if he enjoyed it, then he would spend too much time doing it and he wanted to enjoy his time off, you know? So it's just something you push through.
That's an interesting philosophy.
It's kind of twisted. I didn't really admire it, but it was just a different counterpoint, you know,
that must have been interesting growing up with that. You know, I think there are people in jobs that don't really articulate, you know, oh, I've got a purpose. I'm living my purpose at work.
No, so, definitely some very good paying jobs. You know, work at a warehouse or something, exactly. Paid very, very large hourly wage.
That their purpose in the family is to be the breadwinner, to support the family so that the family can be successful and can get on with living their lives and launching. So, you know, I do think there's a lot of workers that aren't able to really articulate, well, I'm living my purpose. You know, I'm going out today to live my purpose. But I do think we have to approach each day with passion. Otherwise, we are really just going through the motions. And I think for people, they've just got to look at, you know, if I'm in a job I hate, that's showing up. That's not really all well hidden. It's showing up in the attitude and the behavior and the number of sick days and the laissez-faire attitude of approaching whatever the task is. And then you see other people with fire in their belly and they're going, you know, I'm working here at McDonald's and I'm doing hamburgers, but you know, boy, I'm saving some money. I'm helping the family. I'm putting aside things for schooling, training, tech school, whatever it is. And so they are living more of a passionate life than going through the motions. And I think that's the difference.
Well, I think that's really important. So finding work-life balance is all about finding that passion and meaning, even if it's not found in the work, it's found in the result of work. I think we all need that in life. Well, I want to thank you very much, Sue, for being on the show. You're definitely a brains behind it. This has been a great, great time. Tell us the title of your book.
My book is called Clear Your Clutter, 50 Ways to Organize Your Life, Home, or Business so you can become more calm, focused, and happy. And it's available at Amazon. So I say to people, you know, who've got more things they want to do in life, you've got to clear up your environments first. And for any of your listeners, I'd be more than happy to send them a free ebook, which is Simple Strategies for Clutter Clearing You Can Do Now. And if they just send an email to...
We have a link for that in here.
Oh, perfect.
Just find
the link
in
there. On the link and just order the ebook.
So if people want to get in touch with you or they want to get your ebook, we have a link provided and we can also fill in a survey. But thank you very much for being on the show and thanks for being on Brain Hackers.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.